I don't know if it's ringing true on the air, but I feel like this chair is making me a much better broadcaster. If you've not seen the chair, there's photos up at Amy After Hours. And also, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm a weirdo, but I'm pretty excited about the chair. That's up as well on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Whole new woman, whole new chair. Just, I feel like I'm so much more with it on this edition of the show. Oh, goodness. It's the chair. Also, I like this topic. Kind of sink your teeth into this. Most effective and least effective owners in sports. And we're kind of putting together our list. Now, honestly, this only applies to pro sports. And I do think it's more in the last probably 15, 20 years that people are more cognizant of not just head coaches and quarterbacks, but the seventh offensive lineman and the broadcasters and the officials and the ownership groups. It's really been since the advent of social media where we just have more access. And some of these owners are on social media. Some of them aren't. Some of them are in the news constantly. Some of them aren't. Definitely, the ownership is evaluated on wins and losses as well as the people they hire. And yet not always do you have owners stay in the background, right? Not only do you have some owners who like to be front and center, and I have no problem with that. It's your business. This is your franchise. You pay the bills. You write the checks. If you want to be on the sidelines, then be on the sidelines. If you want to do a radio show, do a radio show. But where I feel like a lot of times owners cross over from effective to ineffective is when they meddle. And when they don't trust the people that they put in place to make the actual decisions. You got to hire the right people, especially when it's not your area of expertise. Now, you may not remember this, but it stood out to me when Ben Johnson was doing interviews last year before he decided to stay with Detroit and complete their unfinished business, which I think is terrific. I mean, he's even a hotter coaching commodity now, and we're only 11 weeks into the Lions season, but the numbers they're putting up, they have the benefit, too, of having played the AFC South, which is helping pretty much every franchise that plays against them, like the Vikings this past weekend, too. But one of the things that Ben Johnson said is he felt like the new ownership group there in D.C., which is made up of Josh Harris as the principal owner. He's also the owner of the New Jersey Devils and the Sixers, right? Now, the Sixers haven't been great lately. I'm not so sure that's on him. They've hired good people. They've seemingly drafted well, other than Ben. Remind me of Ben's last name. Ben.
Simmons.
Joel Embiid has had a host of injuries. There's just a lot of things that have happened. So that's kind of gone off the rails. They keep running into a glass ceiling in the second round of the NBA playoffs. But I do think that they've made the Sixers more relevant. The Devils had a terrific season a couple years ago in which they got back to the playoffs and made it into the second round by taking out the Rangers. They've got some really quality young talent. But what Ben Johnson said is, in the meeting, I felt like they were a little bit too pompous, that's my word, in their football knowledge. Maybe not understanding, they don't know as much about football. And having a conversation with them and recognizing that they feel like they know more about football than even the person that they're going to hire. Magic Johnson, another principal owner of that group. So he actually said he was kind of turned off by the fact that instead of just being honest about how little they knew about football, that they didn't. And he felt like his opinion wasn't going to be valued as much, blah, blah, blah. Now, that's reporting, and you can take from it what you will. But I do think it's important when owners know their limitations. I do think it's important when owners hire people who fill in the gaps and who have areas of expertise and skills and talents and abilities that they do not have, right? I don't love the crossover between ownership and GM, although I guess it's one way to not deal with a GM. But that's certainly the situation with Jerry Jones in Dallas. I think it's ridiculous when fans tell owners they should sell the team. What? No, that is the most quality investment that you can make in the business world in the United States of America. You want to get rich? Find yourself a way to buy a sports franchise because they are making money, especially in the NFL. Why do you think there are ownership groups that have nothing to do with sports who want a franchise? Like the Walmart family, the heirs to the Walmart fortune. That family bought the Broncos. Why? Well, because they can, number one. Number two, because you're going to make money. Your empire is about to get even more valuable. So yeah, you tap into the NFL, it's a cash cow. We see that everywhere you go. NBA franchises, even baseball franchises. These are all making money. They're all becoming more and more valuable with every year that goes on. So you can understand why business people want to get into it and why owners don't want to sell and why families want to keep these franchises in-house and in their families. But which ones are the most effective, which are the least effective in sports, and recognizing that that can change too. It doesn't have to be forever and always. 855-212-4227 at A-Law Radio, and then our Facebook page as well. Got a cool GIF. I've got some updates for you, by the way, because the question I get more than anything else, Producer Pete, even more than who's going to win the Super Bowl.
Oh, I know this. I know the answer. So,
what's going on with the neighbor's light?
Uh-huh.
Let there not I promise. Be light. It's coming up within these next 15 minutes. But first, David is in Maryland. David, welcome to After Hours.
Hey, Amy. Thanks for getting me on. First-time sure. caller, long-time listener.
Boom.
Ravens fan, so I want to talk about ownership. Biscotti. Mm-hmm. Very good owner. I mean, as far as the fans concerned, it seems like he's involved but not meddling.
Right.
And I hate that, you know, I despise Jerry Jones because I see him meddling over there and with the Cowboys, and I think it's detrimental to the team. And next thing was Justin Tucker with these missed field goals. He's got to get his mojo back. I mean, he last year I was at the Chiefs playoffs game when they lost, but pregame, Justin Tucker's walking through the Chiefs warm-up.
Yes, and, that was hysterical. Know,
owning the field, and now all of a sudden he doesn't own the field, so I'd like to see him get his mojo back.
Wait, do you think there's any truth to the idea that the Chiefs stole his mojo? Remember, it wasn't just that he was trying to set up his kicking tee right behind where Patrick Mahomes was dropping back, but remember, Mahomes asked him to move it, he did, and then put it right back. Then Travis Kelce comes along and boots that kicking tee back behind the end line.
And I
don't
know. They picked up his helmet and threw his helmet too.
Yeah, so, they might have stolen his mojo, David.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. And I heard you say something earlier about Tomlin. Okay, you know, he might not have the Super Bowls, but who are you going to replace him with?
Exactly.
And I 100% feel the same way with John Harbs. You know, great coach. I do think that Tomlin and Belichick and Reed has had his number in the second halves of their games, and I can't understand all these penalties, so I do put all that on the coach. But who am I going to replace Harbaugh with? Who is out there
Nobody.
Who's going to come in and give me a good solid shot to get to the playoffs every year? I can't think of anybody.
Well, there would be guys that could develop into that. And so that's what a lot of teams are doing. They're taking a flyer on guys. Yeah, but you'd have to take a step back more than likely in order to do that.
Exactly. Thanks, Amy.
Of course. Good to talk to you, David, in Maryland, 855-212-4227. Some of the early returns from our social media on Facebook. David says, while I agree the Rooneys are the most effective owners in the NFL, so coming from Pittsburgh, Bob Nutting is the least effective owner in Major League Baseball, also in Pittsburgh. They should be surrounding Paul Skeens and the pitching staff with a roster to compete in a mediocre central division. He doesn't meddle with his GM, but he doesn't hold them accountable or support them financially. He bought the team for a mere $100 million, and he's made $1 billion over his tenure. The Pirates tear my heart out. Oh, That hurts. That hurts a lot. Yeah, you've got the best of worlds and the worst of worlds in the world of sports. Haha. Eric says, we have the best in Pittsburgh, the Rooneys. We also have the worst in Nutting. Wow, those were a minute apart on our Facebook page. Mike says, Steve Bisciotti, referring to the Ravens, and then the Johnson family, I'm assuming he means Woody and Christopher Johnson, for most effective and least effective, respectively. Randy says, Jerry Jones checks both boxes, entered the league like a champ, a perfect storm, hit hard, but scary, fired Tom Landry, etc., the Super Bowl's return, and since then, well, Yeah, I mean, you certainly can see in a tenure in which an owner is extremely effective, but then for a variety of reasons, maybe there's family issues. Some of these franchises, we've had families fighting over who gets control once a father, a patriarch or a matriarch passes away. They get hung up in court. I mean, that's what happened with the Bolin family after Pat and then his widow also. They both ended up with Alzheimer's. And so the kids were kind of fighting over who was going to have control, ultimately ended up selling the team, which, of course, makes them all rich. But that's the kind of stuff that sometimes happens when it gets passed down. Now, it can also be a positive, right? A lot of people are talking about Detroit and how a few years ago, this would have been the least effective ownership in sports. But now you've got a different approach, different direction. And the Ford family, it's Sheila, right? Sheila's the owner of the team, an older lady, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know exactly how old. I'd have to look it up. If a Lions fan wants to let me know, you can. But a woman who has hired the right people, has empowered those people, and is reaping the fruits of her decisions. Because now the Lions may very well win a Super Bowl before she passes away. I think it's amazing. And I'm not saying she's passing away anytime soon, only that she is a senior citizen. She's 72, right? So she could very well, 73, my fault. She could very well see the Lions finally win a Super Bowl. And that would be a credit to her because she brought the right people in and allowed them to do their jobs. And all of a sudden, you want to talk about a complete reversal when it comes to the tune of those people out there, Lions fans who used to blast the ownership for the decision-making and now are giving her a ton of credit. Let's see, one more. Wow, we have a lot of Pittsburgh fans listening this morning on Facebook. Rooneys are the best owners because they're completely loyal to their coaches. That's why we've had each of our three coaches since 1969 all win Super Bowls. People have wanted Tomlin gone for years now, but at 8-2, everyone loves him. Yeah, I'm with the Rooneys. I think loyalty is a lost art in sports, and I don't think loyalty to a fault, but I do think loyalty to your employees is a big deal. I mean, every one of us has bosses. And you know when your employers and your bosses care about you as a person and if they're loyal to you. And there's no doubting the results are better when you empower and support and encourage the people. And I don't mean necessarily hand-holding. I don't mean throwing Christmas dinners. We don't even get to go to those anyway because we work weird hours. I don't mean raises necessarily, though. That's one way to let your employees know that you support them and care about them. But how about just letting them know? How about giving them the tools they need to do their jobs? Like a new chair. It only's taken 12 years.
Got to start somewhere.
Yeah, seriously. Baby steps. 855-212-4227. Let's see. Online, I've got a couple, or online on our Twix account, I've got a couple more. Let's see.
I'll say this real quick about loyalty. That might be the thing that's costing Jerry Jones here, because if you look at it, how he started off, he wasn't loyal to Tom Landry. Oh. And then when Jimmy Johnson came in and they were having success, no loyalty there.
Well, they had
a falling out.
I was going to say they had a very public
right.
falling out.
Now look at it. He has not won since.
Now they've come close, but you're right that it's been decades now without getting back to the Super Bowl or the NFC Championship, right?
Right. I think that's more meddling than say maybe the Jets. I think Woody Johnson would probably stay out of it if he did better hiring.
And yet George Steinbrenner, the original Steinbrenner, uh-huh. I mean, he would hire and fire managers like you would change out the pieces of gum or a pair of socks right. That you're using. And yet they were still winners. But he was notorious for fuming at his managers and his front office people and just deciding, that's it, I'm cleaning house.
Well, he set the tone really for the bombast of owners and public, owners being so public. Was Steinbrenner, and it really, he calmed down because he got suspended. I think when he got suspended, everyone talks about how he wasn't running the organization, other people were, and it changed him a little bit. But still, when he came back, he was still dabbling in there. He still wanted to trade people that they shouldn't have traded, and they didn't end up trading them, like Andy Pettit or whatnot. But yeah, Steinbrenner really is the reason why all these owners are getting involved, so I blame George.
One of the greatest late years skit for Seinfeld. I mean, one of the best skits. And it, I don't, if I remember correctly, it didn't happen until later in the show's run when they got, I guess that particular skit, but also ended up having a dude portray him. You never saw his face, of course, but the voice was so good. to have George in his office working and forever disappointing the boss and getting called on the carpet, that was such a good skit that I think kind of provided years and years of endless amusement.
Or how about George on SNL when he would appear on SNL? That stuff was funny. He was making fun of himself. I think he realized, hey, look, you know, there's another side of me. I gotta make sure that's out there, too.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We're looking at some of your responses to most and least effective owners in sports. And the reason we do it is because, or say it that way, is because we don't want you to take personal shots. I get it. A lot of people don't love Jerry Jones, and that's okay. But that's not what we're asking. We're asking who is the most effective, who is the least effective. I had to look it up. But it was Larry David who was the voice of George Steinbrenner. Let's see. I think, does that mean? I'm going to make sure I can confirm that. I wanted to know who did the voice.
Sounds about right.
Okay, let's see. I'm going to just put it in here just to be sure because he popped up, but I don't know if I'm reading it correctly. Larry David. Seinfeld was created by Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld. Maybe I got that wrong. I'm going to have to figure it out. Voiced by Larry David, la, 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 season 7, la, 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 began airing on, I don't know. The voice, yeah, Larry David, the voice of George Steinbrenner.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, all right. The two different Georges. Let's talk to Mike, who's in Marietta, Georgia. Welcome to After Hours.
Hey, Amy.
Hey.
Hey, look, as far as Tomlin, I couldn't disagree more. This guy is average. Look, above average. Look, is our goal to win 9 games every year or to win a Super Bowl? When was the last time he won a Super Bowl?
You know the answer to that.
Hey, so, okay, so look. So, it kills me. I'm in Atlanta, or right outside Atlanta in Marietta. It kills me how Bobby Cox gets hammered. For being up, couldn't get over the hump. Great manager, always could get you to the dance, just couldn't get you over the hump. Why is the thing not true for Mike Tomlin?
Well, because he does have a Super Bowl, number one. Number two, I would just push back on that a little bit. It's not the realistic expectations and the expectations of fans, those don't always match up. I mean, there are times when you just aren't good enough to win a Super Bowl, and that's not always on the head coach. I mean, and that's where I kind of come in with the Tomlin never having had a losing season. He doesn't average 9 wins, but there have been a few years recently here where at the end of Ben Roethlisberger's tenure, he wasn't a good quarterback. Of course, the Rooney family was loyal. They were going to let him leave when and how he wanted to, even long after there was any balance in the offense and long after they needed to keep him on the roster. He had earned that in the eyes of the Rooneys. But the last 2-3 years of his tenure, not great quarterback play. Then you've had a revolving door since then. So, I mean, I think sometimes as much as you want to say Super Bowl or bust, that's not always realistic. And yet they have still had winning records or made the playoffs despite some of the things that have that, you know, would hold other teams back.
Okay, so this is the question. Would you rather have Doug Peterson for 1 year in Philly and then have it all go wrong and look at Doug Peterson's fall every since then, or just be good winning 9 games every year?
Again, that's not what Mike Tomlin's done. You're just completely taking out of the equation some of the other accomplishments and also the fact that he's a Super Bowl winner.
How many times?
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Name another coach out there other than, say, Andy Reid, John Harbaugh. How many coaches out there have won multiple Super Bowls who are active?
So that don't mean we don't try. I mean, you can't just sit back and be like, oh, we're good.
Well, yes, I'm sure that's what Mike Tomlin is doing. Oh, we're good. Who cares? Who gives a crap? Are you kidding?
So how come it looks like they never can do anything on offense? I mean, They're a defensive team. They never try anything different.
Interesting, because I was pretty sure Mike Tomlin just went from Justin Fields to Russell Wilson, even though it was his decision and it wasn't super popular. And in three games, the offense took a major upturn. It was trending up, and they won those three games. And I know they didn't beat the Ravens with touchdowns, but they still won. Their offense is much better now, and that was the decision of Coach Tomlin.
He's overrated, in my opinion. He's overrated.
Who rates him exactly? Who rates him?
Well, obviously the media. He's a darling. I mean, he can do no wrong.
I didn't say he could do no wrong. I think your Super Bowl expectations every year are unrealistic. And he's still getting teams to the playoffs. He's still getting them to the point where they're part of the conversation.
Okay. So listen, as a fan. And this is, obviously, we know what fans stand for. You know, all I care about is them getting to the Super Bowl. He's average at best. He's average. He's a great soundbite. I mean, I'll give you that.
Is that it? He's average at best, and he's a great soundbite.
I mean, what's he done lately? Is that not what this is about?
So somehow he forgot how to coach?
You don't forget how to coach, obviously. Look at Sean Payton.
Duh.
I mean, this guy, I mean, you got to have good players. But he's overrated. He's overrated.
Mike, well, as you point out, you are a fanatic with very high expectations. And so, yes, if your expectations are Super Bowl every year, then you're going to be disappointed most of the time because that's not the standard. I mean, the NFL, half the playoff field turns over every single year. So if that's the standard, then, of course, there's going to be more disappointment than there is success. But I will just have to disagree on this one. Thank you so much for your phone call. I appreciate it. Sorry, way late on this one. I'm not telling you that Super Bowls aren't the goal, but to believe that you can win a Super Bowl every year is unrealistic. To look back at last year's team, that how many different quarterbacks started and the fact that they were in transition still, 2023, they had 10 wins. I mean, in the toughest division in football, they're in the AFC North that had every single team above 500, and they really were just kind of hit or miss with quarterback. He's a leader. Guys want to play for him. Russell Wilson wanted to go play for him. Justin Fields wanted to play for him. There are guys that want to be there, guys that rave about him. I talked to current and former Steelers. You never hear a bad word about Mike Tomlin. And so that's part of it, too, is that he gets guys to not just play hard for him, but to care and to buy in. So as much as I appreciate that you want to win another Super Bowl and that he hasn't been to one since 2010, won the one in 2008, of course, I still say that not having a losing record, poo-pooing double-figure win seasons in one of the toughest divisions in the game is, yeah, it kind of speaks to the entitlement of being a Steelers fan. But I understand. I understand that there's a high level of expectation. I assure you, Mike Tomlin has the same one. At A-Law Radio, our Facebook page too, who are the most effective and least effective owners in sports? No one's disputing the Rooneys, only their choice of head coach, I suppose, and he just signed a new deal. 855-212-4227. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Ooh, that's some snazzy music. Jazzy. Well, it's not really jazzy, but it'll wake you up. It's peppy. Put a little pep in your step. Although I'm not stepping anywhere. I'm sitting in this chair for the entire 4 hours. No, it's not true. Then my butt will start to hurt. But also because I have to get up and record my sports minute here in a second. 855-212-4227 at A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page. It's okay to disagree. The world would be really boring if we all agreed. This is not supposed to be a discussion about Mike Tomlin. It's supposed to be a discussion about ownership. But Mark in Butler, Pennsylvania, welcome to After Hours.
How are you tonight, Amy?
I'm good, sir. Thank you.
Good. I just, I never call these shows. I listen every night. I work night shift, and I never take the time to call. But I am really tired of it. Like, I don't know how this gentleman in Atlanta feels like he has the pulse of Pittsburgh right at his fingertips there. But as in any situation, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And that's all you hear is the naysayers down here. But 80% of us are just like me, and we keep quiet and go to work and love to watch our Steelers.
Oh.
And we don't want Tomlin going anywhere. So that's just how I feel about it. The majority of the people I talk to, we love Tomlin. And it's just the people that want to complain about whatever.
I like that. Dismiss it. You don't have to listen to the noise. Well, I will say this. As much as I understand that the gold standard is Super Bowls, especially for an iconic franchise like Pittsburgh, fact is they've gone through some major transition on the offensive side of the ball. Go back to the Killer Bees. That was really the last time that they had that kind of, I would say, established offense that could really go out and beat just about any defense. But since then, it's been steady change. The end of Roethlisberger, the Pickett situation, Mitch Trubisky, now it's Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, and Tomlin, I think, is doing a great job to keep them relevant, and at times at the end of the year, looks like they're not going to make the playoffs, and somehow they're still there knocking on the door, and now here they are, they're leading the AFC North, they're one of the best teams in football, and I guess he doesn't get credit for that. I'm not sure why.
And again, most teams, in my opinion, would have hung on to Kenny Pickett because he's a first-round draft pick for another 3 years to the end, just declined that fifth-year option and wasted these years of T.J. Watt. He said no. That's just my, again, my opinion. I just really feel like he's the reason why people like Russell Wilson and these free agents want to come.
Agreed. I agree with that. Why guys stay? Because of Tomlin. You hear that over and over. Thanks so much for calling, Mark. And thank you for listening faithfully.
Hey, thank you, guys. Have a good night.
In Butler, PA. I've been there. I've driven through there in some snowstorms. Oh, dear. You don't want to be driving through there in snowstorms. I think Highway 79 goes up into Butler, if I'm not mistaken, the interstate.
I guess that's just highway.
Jamal is in Georgia. Welcome to After Hours. What do you think, Jamal?
Hey, I just want to talk about David Tepper in Carolina.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Exactly.
That's all you can say is, oh, my God. Like, I was really excited for him because he was coming from the Pittsburgh organization. And I was like, okay, we're going to have another ownership like that. That's cool. They're good owners.
I mean, he's beyond impatient.
You know, and I'm like, okay. You know, then leading up to the draft, you know, you put people in place to make these draft picks, and then you don't trust them. So you go in there and you draft, you know, this high school student. I don't have nothing against Bryce Young, you know, as a person, but, you know, the guy's not big enough to play NFL quarterback, in my opinion, you know? And it's just all roads leading up to C.J. Stroud being drafted, and next thing you know, here it comes. First pick of the draft is Bryce Young, and then it's like when they play Houston and Carolina, you obviously can see who Frank Wright and everybody wanted because they were at midfield laughing and cackling with C.J. Stroud while Bryce Young was standing in the background like, hey, I won the game. What about me?
I would agree with you about Tepper, and maybe it's just about – I mean, it's impatience, obviously. Also just about having unrealistic expectations or wanting to make a mark as an owner. But this whole trend, let's hope he skips it this year with Dave Canales, this trend of firing coaches in season, that has got to stop. Because you know what's going to happen? The people are not going to want to play there. They're not going to want to go and coach there. And I know head coaches, there's only 32 jobs, right? So guys will take it. But this is... it's a reputation that he's building there as this owner, and it's going to hurt his franchise if he doesn't lay off.
Yes, I totally agree with that because it's already hurting the franchise. But now I think Canales has got a culture there. He's building up. And I think, you know, a report came out that he's turning over, like, the football decisions to a ownership group like he did with his soccer team. So I'm hoping that he just stays up there, signs checks, and smiles, and stops throwing drinks on fans.
Good point. That's also not a good look. And it's videoed, right?
Oh, my God. I stay in Georgia, first of all. I'm working in the airport. I'm around Georgia fans all day, every day.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, my God.
Do you work at the – are you talking about the big airport, the main airport?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh my gosh, that talk about navigating that airport. It is. I mean, it's like an Olympic sport there. Hartshorn? Yeah.
It's a stressful job.
Oh. Well, we're glad we can keep you.
If you're not from there, if you don't work there, it's overwhelming.
Well, it can be for sure, and we're glad to keep you company though while you work. Thank you, Jamal.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. That is an airport, along with Newark, which is just so expansive. I would say L.A. only because it's stressful. Just trying to get to the airport, stressful. Houston, I actually don't have issues with, though people tell me Houston's tough. Dallas, Fort Worth, that one's enormous. Oh my gosh, O'Hare in Chicago, that's another one where if you don't know it and you're not familiar with it, you can get overwhelmed really quickly.
O'Hare, I opt for the other airport in Chicago.
Oh, you do?
I fly in there.
Shoot,
Midway.
I forgot the name
Midway.
Of it. Midway, there you go. And that's the big one for Southwest, the
yes.
Southwest hub.
Yes, that's, yeah. But O'Hare, and if you're stuck, you can basically go shopping and get dinner, lunch, and breakfast.
I actually don't mind O'Hare. I just know that a little experience with it makes it easier to navigate and less stressful. That's for sure. And we're talking about airports, and I mean airports like their owners. Most effective and least effective owners in sports. So David Tepper, he's definitely on the list. And if you've forgotten, he bought the Panthers in 2018 and since then has gone through a revolving door, Russian roulette with his coaches. Do you know? And he also owns Charlotte FC, by the way, in the MLS. Do you know that they're on their sixth head coach? Sixth?
That's stunning.
Head coach. Let's see. He hired Matt Rhule. Well, first he fired Ron Rivera. So he bought the team when Ron Rivera was the coach. He fires Ron Rivera. Then he hires Matt Rhule out of, it was Baylor at the time, right? It was first Temple, then Baylor. Matt Rhule then fires him. So he's had multiple interim coaches too. Steve Wilkes the locker room loved him and he got rid of him. Then brought in Frank Reich along with Bryce Young. Fired him not even midway through the season. Shoot, I forgot who took over after that. There was an interim there as well.
There was a 1 year, right? Hold on. Now I'm gonna take a look down.
Yeah, I am too.
Memory lane.
But there was an interim coach after that, and then he brings in Dave Canales, and he takes him from the Tampa Bay staff. So Dave Canales is a first year head coach. I'm going Panthers. I just know this is his sixth or seventh, if you count interims. That's the hard thing. If you're counting interims.
Okay, go from Ron Rivera, you had interim Perry Fuel.
Perry, oh, I forgot about Perry.
Right, then you had Matt Rhule, right?
We yes. talked
about him, Steve Wilkes, right? Then he brought in Frank Reich, and then Chris Tabor took
over for him. Oh, that's right. That's why nobody remembers him, because he was out of left field.
But Frank Reich won one game. He only had 11 games. He was 1-10.
People may forget that John Fox and Ron Rivera had long tenures there with the Panthers. And then all of a sudden it became a revolving door. So Rivera, Rhule, Reich, and Canales, all official head coaches, but Tabor, Fuel, and Wilkes, all interim head coaches, and none of them had the chance to get the job.
They actually had the most consistent, one of the most consistent head coaching positions from like 20, from the early 2000s to like the end of the 20s.
And went to a Super Bowl, right, with Cam Newton and Ron Rivera. It would be a fun sports trivia game to try to name all of his coaches, including interims, and all the quarterbacks since he took over as the owner. So, yeah, that's definitely a least effective one. Most and least effective owners in sports at Amy After Hours, also on our Facebook page. Glad to have you with us. 855-212-4227. We'll get to more of your calls coming up. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
All right, and with college football playoff format going through its first season with 12 teams, and seems like everyone's still trying to get a handle on how to play things. Top four conference champions get a bye, of course, but Lane Kiffin expressing the downside with actually making a conference championship game.
Reward to get a bye versus the risk to get knocked out completely. I mean, that's a really big risk just to get a bye. So I think it's ended up being a very unique situation of all, postseason sports, the way that system's set up there and how you could go to that and get knocked out. And if you don't go, you're in.
Well, after seeing their 15-game win streak come to a halt, the Cavs right back to their winning ways.
Niang ahead to Porter. Left side to Tyson. Back out front, George. Another three. Bullseye! Number six for George Niang.
No hesitation playing this season, Tim, with complete confidence.
George Niang heating up from downtown.
Six threes, 20 points in all. Cavs roll the Pelicans 128-100. Call courtesy of the Cavs Radio Network. Elsewhere, the Bucks dismissed the Bulls 122-106 as Giannis Antetokounmpo poured in 41 points with 9 rebounds and 8 assists. Warriors punished the Hawks 120-97. Rockets drill the Pacers 130-113. Knicks roll the Suns 138-122. Jalen Brunson 36. Karl Anthony Towns 8 of 34. Grizzlies handled the Sixers 117-111. Clippers knocked off the Magic 104-93 as James Harden had 24 points and 7 boards. And the Thunder erased the Blazers 109-99. College hoops, Gonzaga pounded Long Beach State 84-41. 8th-ranked Alabama outscored number 25, Illinois 100-87. Texas A&M overpowered Southern 71-54. And Rutgers knocked off Merrimack 74-63. College football, Ohio down Toledo 24-7, while Buffalo took out Eastern Michigan 37-20. Baseball, Chris Sale, your NL Cy Young winner in his first season with the Braves. Tigers' Tarik Skubal took home the AL honors. And UConn's Gino Auriemma became the NCAA all-time basketball wins leader at 1,217, passing Stanford's Tara Vanderveer. I'm Marco Belletti.
Hey, sports fans, it's Jim Rome. Check us out 24-7 on Sirius XM, channel 158.
The field, on the money, and after hours.
Abe Laufenberg is with us from Dallas.
When we've got an afternoon game on the East Coast, Washington, Philly, New York, I get in my car and I listen to your show driving home. I get caught up on the NFL. Because when you're at the game and you're doing a game,
right,
you're not following all the other games.
We're always happy to keep you company on those long road trips.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Good morning to you if you're waking up on your Thursday. I know there is a lot of much-needed rain and other precipitation for the Northern Plains, the Upper Midwest, on into the Mid-Atlantic and the Northeast. It's supposed to rain and or snow a good portion of Thursday. I'm so thankful. We are in a major drought in my neighborhood and lots of parts of the country. I keep watching the map on my phone. It's definitely raining. If that's you, well, eek, the rain dance worked. 855-212-4227. We're asking you about the worst. No. I'm trying to be diplomatic and professional. I was going to say best and worst, but let's be a little more specific. The most effective and least effective owners in sports. There's obviously many candidates, and I don't just mean football. We've been hearing about some of the others, Bob Nutting with the Pittsburgh Pirates. How about John Fisher with the A's and that disaster? And now they're moving into a minor league ballpark in Sacramento and then on to Vegas. And there have been some owners who have done their franchises wrong. Now, it is their prerogative because they're the owners, but it can be hard to stomach some of these moves. And I will say again, my firm belief about sports, constant change equals constant losing. And sometimes when you have owners who are less than patient, you have owners who will not allow their coaches, their general managers, their front offices to establish their culture, to try to create an identity, to even just to build a foundation. You're constantly changing. Well, then you're constantly losing.
I have a quick question about John Fisher. I'm going to be the devil's advocate a little bit. How much of it was on Oakland? Because, look, three teams left. So, I mean, and how much of it is them with all these teams and these teams leaving?
Well, there definitely is plenty of blame to go around. But if you believe the stories that are out there, the city of Oakland had a proposal in place and was ready to help him to build this facility. Now, I agree. For too long, they were in the Coliseum. The NFL hated it. They did not want a facility that was shared with a baseball team that had dirt in the middle of the field for a good portion of its games. And the Coliseum was in desperate need of a facelift. It was a dump. If you ask anybody who played there, fans who would go there. And yeah, when you don't put a winning product on the field, fans aren't going to show up. So it just became a nasty cycle that snowballed. So I'm sure there's blame in both places. But it did seem like at the end, Oakland was willing, more motivated to work with the A's ownership.
I agree with you on Fisher, but I just look at it from the other side, too. Like, I think there's blame on the A side, on Oakland side as well with a lot of this stuff too.
That's true. Reggie is in Chicago. Reggie, welcome to After Hours.
Thank you for taking my call, Amy.
Sure.
Boy, you really hit me a couple of times very, very hard.
Figuratively.
The last thing first. I lost my wife in 2020.
Oh.
But we had a magical time. During the course of our marriage, she was from the Bay Area. I was from Chicago. We enjoyed 11 championships. Did you get it? 11 championships.
That's a lot.
3 Blackhawk wins.
Nice.
Three Warrior wins. The Giants won 3 times. The White Sox won the World Series.
Whoa.
The Cubs won the World Series. Do you get it?
I do. You're kind of spoiled, actually.
I mean, it was, and I remember getting chastised by one of my brothers-in-law. He called and he asked my wife if I'd taken her to Wrigley Field. And she said, no, he didn't take me up there. And so I said, well, okay, I'm going to take you. So we went. And I didn't have tickets. We drove up there on a Sunday. We get to the ballpark. The game has already started. I parked the car. We walked through an alley to get to out there. There's a guy that sees my wife wearing a Giants jersey. You got tickets? No. You need tickets? I got tickets. How much? Free.
Wow.
He hands us the tickets that were $35 a piece. And we go, no problem. Ushers us right to the seats. Okay.
Nice. Wait, sir, we have about 45 seconds, so I don't want to have to cut you off, but
okay,
I want to get to your point.
I'm an NFL bigamist. Lifelong Bears fan, but I've been wooed by the black and yellow.
Nice.
I had a friend. I lost him in 16. He was an avid. His father was a super scout for the Steelers.
Mm.
Okay. And he became an actor. You know him. His name was Bill Nunn.
Okay.
Okay.
About 30 seconds.
And so, yeah, I went to his memorial service in Pittsburgh on the, it was scheduled for a Sunday night, and we couldn't get any, we hardly could get a hotel room. Steeler Nation had descended on Pittsburgh so tough.
They are so popular there in Pittsburgh. Reggie, thank you so much. I'm so sorry we had to cut you off in Chicago. The music's about to cut me off, but thank you so much for sharing your stories. I appreciate hearing from you. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.